Welcome to the best damn podcast ever. My name is Blake Buck, and co-hosting with me this week is William Miller.
How you doing, Blake Buck?
I'm doing pretty good. This is a late show for us. It's a Wednesday. We're supposed to do this Sunday. What's going on?
This show has been trying to happen for weeks.
Dude, Sunday was Super Bowl.
Sunday was Super Bowl. And Blake Buck, who led our team to victory?
Dude, I don't even know. It was like...
That'd be Peyton Manning, baby. Peyton Manning played for Ole Miss, your alma mater. Come on now.
Peyton Manning, that's all I know how to say.
Golden arm Peyton Manning led the Colts to victory, and I watched it and reveled in every second of it.
We've also got Justin Ficarotta of Kill Monty fame.
How are we, fellas?
We're doing good. We're doing good. Justin Fick, how have you been?
Justin Fick's been doing well. He is. He's gotten much better. Gotten over the sick.
Justin Fick, when are we going to see another hot date?
Dude, my hot date now is with Xbox.
Ooh, I love it.
She's a brick.
All right, and this is your gaming... What is the date? When is this going to happen? I'm going to estimate when Mr. Barbalay can get this out. We'll call this Monday the 12th. And this is your gaming news for Monday, January... Goddamn... And this is your gaming news. Shut up. And this is your gaming news for Monday, February 12th, 2000.
There we go.
Close enough.
All right, this week in the news, eBay delisting most virtual items, girl gamers on the rise in Australia, Burger King plus Xbox equals a king's ransom, Microsoft details Xbox Live Arcade releases, Vista shipping out, Sony's numbers add up, Sony rep will Wii is an impulse buy, Microsoft rewrites the gamer score rules, Castlevania collected on the PSP, and Florida Bar charges Jack Thompson, and Jack Thompson is in trouble with the Florida Bar all over again. All this and more in this week's Best Damn Podcast Ever.
That's a good job, Blake Buck.
Yeah, it's all at the top now.
It's important to mention that we get all of our news from GameSpot, so if you're hearing these headlines for the second time, then that's why. eBay, delisting most virtual items. The ubiquitous auction site is canceling auctions for all virtual items and property, with one major exception, and that major exception is, Blake Buck?
That would be Second Life, because apparently that's a Second Life and doesn't count as a video game.
That's correct. So, to decrease the so-called gold farming practice, which has sprung up in sweatshops all over the place, the popular auction site is removing virtual items from games like World of Warcraft and EverQuest 2 and all these other things, but they're keeping Second Life.
Okay, you know what? I do not follow this logic whatsoever, because of all virtual assets, whether it be weapons and Warcraft, what have you, Second Life is the last thing I want on my eBay. Like, selling plus one sword of elf stabby face is one thing, and then selling boxes of fox is, I don't know, because,
You know you love it, Justin Fickle. What I don't get is, why do you keep Second Life? Because Second Life already has the infrastructure inside the game to buy and sell items from, you know, everybody in the game, and everybody makes their own stuff. I mean, like, it seems like the infrastructure is already in place for buying and selling in Second Life. Why would you even need eBay?
That's a good point. Also, why is it important whether it's a game or not? Who cares? Like, why is eBay chosen that distinction to base what virtual items are valuable or valid than... You know, I mean, who cares if it's a game or not?
Dude, they just like Fox at eBay, all right? They get a free box from them every month.
The eBay CEO is a furry.
All right, moving on.
All right, girl gamers are on the rise in Australia. A new study shows that 41% of Aussie gamers are women, and 34% of gamers down under have played a pirated game.
Yar!
So the percent of... The percent of Australian women gamers is up from 38% in 2005 to 41% in 2006. And this is the Interactive Entertainment Association of Australia in conjunction with the Bond University Center for New Media Research. And they are predicting that female gamers will equal the number of male gamers by 2012.
Hmm.
2012. Now that looks like the future. Like when I see 2010, or like when I see 2009, that's like a few years from now. But 2012, we're gonna have space cars by then.
Oh, yeah. I would say we're more likely to see space cars than girl gamers.
Well, apparently it's a growing. I guess maybe is it? You know, I don't. I'm not too familiar with this article. I didn't read it, but I guess like casual games are a big part of that. It says both female gamers prefer to play puzzles, board games, card games, and family titles, while males preferred the shooters.
Okay, well, here's the thing. This I'm sure the stat does include casual games and casual gamers. So old ladies and you know soccer moms, grandmas, anyone over any female over 40. Does not count as a female gamer. You were like asexual at that point.
Why is it in America we hate old people?
Dude, the way I look at it, the life expectancy back in the caveman days was 25 for a reason.
Justin Fick lives by caveman rules. So, yeah, if you're playing games and you're a girl, more power to you. There are more of you out there, I guess, especially in Australia. So, Burger King plus Xbox equals a king's ransom. Burger slinging restaurant chain says it has 3.2 million Burger King themed games, helps spur a whopper of a whopper of traffic and a 40% rise in its quarterly profits. I'm not even gonna. I can tell. I can just read the first. If anyone needed, and like I know there's some joke right at the beginning of this article, so I'm skipping to paragraph two. The fast food chain reported a 40% strike and 40% spike in its quarterly sales period ending December 31st, 2006. Net income for the company was $38 million for that period, up from $27 million of the same period for the previous year. So Burger King games, big bucks. I'm ready for Taco Bell games, guys.
Yeah, if you could have any other restaurant chain make a game or a series of games, what would it be? Taco Bell, Blake Buck. What about you, Justin Fick?
Jack in the Box.
Jack in the Xbox. Copyright Blake Buck 2007. Can't have it now, baby.
No, but you would just play Jack and then go around and make burgers and then get burgers from your wife at night. Just based off the commercial.
What?
You never saw that commercial? Mean?
No. See, in the South, we don't have Jack in the Box. That's a Yank. That's a Yank chain.
Blake Bug, it occurs to me that we need a not safe for work siren or sound effect to precede any rant by Justin Fick that's not work safe. It's like an air raid siren that goes off.
Tom Barbalay, get on it. So, Burger King CEO John W. Chinzi says, "Our brand and great food continue to resonate with our restaurant guests, specifically our Burger King value meal, as well as our innovative Xbox game collection." Oh, this is so gross with like PR juice all over it. Which was the best-selling game for the holiday season, with more than 3.2 million copies sold, increased both sales and restaurant traffic. They called it the best-selling game of the holiday season. Says Chinzi.
Man, but I think like the Burger King formula worked really well because the thing that they're basing these games on, this king, is already creepy and well known to be sort of
like, yeah, it's almost like an internet meme, the Burger King.
It's a meme already, so it's not like McDonald's could come in and do the same thing. It's not going to work, you know?
That's true. But see, here's the thing about the Burger King. Like, I think they got to hide the power. See? Burger King, like, if they gave us the king all the time, notice there haven't been as many, like, king commercials, at least I don't think, running on TV. I don't watch TV that much, but the king hasn't been as prevalent over the past few months. They gotta let him lie low for a few months. He was riding high at the end of the year, but now he's gotta go back down. Gotta hide him in the closet, and then right when the holiday comes up again, bring the king back.
can't let the king rest on his laurels.
Also, on the show, we convert all prices to sneak kings.
Yeah, but I'm gonna rock your world, though. Come
uh-oh.
Jank of the week.
Uh oh. Well, we got to save that. We got to hide that power. All right. Microsoft details XBLA release. Band of Bugs eats. What is this? Crackdown. Yeah. Band of Bugs Crackdown Luxor 2 announced along with 7 others coming to Xbox Live Arcade beginning in February. So,
where are my games, baby?
Where are they?
Where are my games? I ain't got nothing new on my Xbox in like 2 weeks. What's going on?
All right, so included on the list are previously announced Alien Hominid HD, Castlevania Symphony of the Night, oh my god, Paperboy, Root Beer, Tapper, Worms, 3D Ultra, Mini Golf, Adventures, and Catan, previously known as Settlers of Catan. Have you ever played Settlers of Catan, either of you?
I am afraid.
The only Catan I know is Chris Catan, and he is not funny.
It's one of those games that you play, if you're like a game design student or if you're a game designer, it's like you play Settlers of Catan because it's really good. Game or something. Anyway, I'm really looking forward to this Castlevania Symphony of the Night business because I've probably bought that game maybe 6 times because the disc is so prone to scratching and...
Oh my god, I know what you... Like, wait, did you and me ever talk about this together? Like, I'm on like my 3rd tape of Symphony of the Night.
That tape gets messed up.
Never lend your Symphony of the Night tape to anybody. I mean anybody. It's probably you. I probably lent this to you, and you went to some hobo. Oh, you want? Dude. I want Symphony of the Night, William. You go to somebody who can get it for me.
You know, Blake. You know, I take all your games and just stomp on them. Right? That's what happens when you lend them to me.
Don't stomp my tapes.
All right, just a quick rundown of our of this week's releases. This is called the Justin Fick Jenks Partner Net and checks out all these games. Band of Bugs, while I haven't played that one, it's looking like almost like a Final Fantasy Tactics looking game, but it's kind of like mixed Final Fantasy Tactics with a Bug's Life, but it looks like you can create your own creatures and
dude, that sounds dumb.
It kind of does. Eats Chow Down is another I'm not gonna lie. Each Chowdown is I did get to play this one, and I can confirm for a fact that this one is dumb. This is basically it's kind of like cross Lemmings and an Incredible Machine. So you play this dude.
Well, those are two games we like.
Yeah, those are two good games. How can that be bad?
Easy. You make it cutesy and casual.
Yeah.
But basically, you play this dude called Eats. And you place cute critters on the screen, and cute critters will interact with each other and get Eats to the goal point, which is something that he inevitably has to eat, or a puzzle piece, or whatever.
Yeah, you're right. That does sound dumb.
Yeah.
We'll forward that one to Ariel, Blake Buck.
Official casual game reviewer. Now, Justin Fick, let me ask you, can you talk about PartnerNet? Like, can you talk about your Xbox power? Is this
well? PartnerNet is it's one of those things where it's everyone talks about it like you're really not supposed to. I don't know.
I don't know. So we're gonna do it. That's just a fixed logic.
Pretty much.
Apparently there's lots of heat on SA regarding PartnerNet, right, Justin Fick?
Yeah, I mean it's all this stuff is pretty much out, but you're not supposed to like take screenshots of it because they're unfinished games. And then games that are maybe in a very, very early state, like for instance, Ikaruga is up for a download on PartnerNet, but it crashes on launch. So I don't, you know.
Wait, it crashes when?
On launch.
Oh, well, that just saves you time playing that game. Saves you a lot of heartache. That's actually a design feature. You buy it. Congratulations, you win.
Yeah, Ikaruga is one of those games that only ends in tears.
Who's got this Vista power?
All right, so Vista is now shipping. The new Windows operating system has gone on sale worldwide after years of delays and allows PC gamers to connect to Xbox Live.
Ooh.
Microsoft's latest operating system, Vista, has launched on January 30th. And it also brings with it DirectX 10, which is a new graphics application programming process, which claims to provide better performance for some effects, including rippling water, smoke, and lightning. And Microsoft totally did not write that. So there are there are some games that that they are pushing out. For instance, there is a new Shadowrun, which is boasting Xbox 360 and PC interplayability.
Dude, that game's gonna suck.
Well,
I remember playing the first one for Sega. That game was awesome. It was like one of those real non-linear kind of things. Like you could just do anything you wanted to.
And you just went around and shot people. That's all Blake Buck did. It's like, they gave me a gun. That was a bad call. Blake Buck just goes down the street shooting prostitutes all day and gets nothing accomplished.
Well, I had a good time with it.
So, and some of the first games to use DirectX 10 that we'll be seeing are the first-person shooter Crysis, if you guys remember that, Flight Simulator X, and Age of Conan, Hyborian Adventures.
So a bunch of my peers will say in the game design department, they like to play a game called World of Warcraft, and a bunch of them went out and got this Vista Heat, and it dropped their World of Warcraft frame rate by about 20. They're not very happy about that.
Oh man, can't level up your Blood Paladin if you're running Vista.
So one thing I think is really interesting about this Vista is they also have a new kind of like a rule set for a new logo called Games for Windows on game packaging. To qualify, games must meet a set of guidelines, including easy install, compatible with Xbox 360 controller, Vista compatibility, and support for widescreen resolution, multi-core, and multi-threading.
Now, wait a minute. Compatibility with the 360 controller. How are you going to write an RTS that does that?
Battle of Middle Earth 2 did it.
Yeah, but I guess, but like, I don't know. That seems like a design headache waiting to happen, just to get that Games for Windows sticker on your box.
Well, I'm sure the rules can be bent.
Oh yeah, I'm sure. But still.
And they've also don't they also have a digital download client similar to Steam on Vista?
I don't know. I hadn't heard anything about that.
Neither
have I.
Well, no one knows anything. So.
Well, I got a little juicy piece of heat. While we're talking about Vista, we can move over to Mac now. I get emails all the time in my inbox from my college talking about people coming in offering internships or whatever. Anyway, Apple is coming on the 26th to looking for people to do animation modeling and texturing for what I suppose are first party game titles. It's an on site internship at the Apple campus making game assets. So first party titles from Apple, we'll see.
Yeah, that's happening. Mm-hmm. It's totally happening. Apple's going to all... Like, look at Vista. They're doing everything right. They're really, like, focusing on the game side of their new operating system. They're doing everything right. And you look at Apple, they're like, oh, I guess video games exist, maybe.
Well, if you think about it, though, Apple is, like, the perfect platform for games. Like, it has all the benefits of a console without the hassles of a console. Everybody's pretty much got the same hardware on their desk.
And has 0.05% market share.
Well, that's true, but I mean, you've got Intel processors now, so you can make cross-platform games that could run on Windows, presumably.
Look, son, I'm done with it. I'm done with Mac. I'm done.
All right.
It's on. What is it? What does Stephen Colbert have? It's on notice. The Mac gaming industry.
Well, anyway, William Miller is gonna go for that job.
All right. So Sony's numbers don't add up. The electronics giant takes a hit. The electronics giant takes a hit with costs associated with the PlayStation 3, but bounces back with strong sales of consumer goods. So things may not be as bad as previously thought for Sony Computer Entertainment. Yesterday, a survey of 5 analysts by financial services, blah, 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 predicted reporting of, what does it say? They thought that Sony could be reporting a 50% drop in profits. However, today, Sony released their third quarter of report for 2006, and their profits were only down 5.3%. Compared to the last period. So everybody was predicting, oh, well, the PlayStation, they're taking such a huge price cut with the PlayStation 3 that their numbers are going to be way down. But their other consumer-based electronics, let's see if they mention anything specifically. What else does Sony sell besides PlayStations? they make everything. Did they mention anything here?
Negative.
No. Oh, here we go.
This was the wrong article to have Blake Buck read.
It's the sales of their Bravia televisions and CyberShot digital cameras are mentioned as being especially strong. So, yeah, their other consumer electronics have really helped boost their PS3 woes. So,
well, they're going to need it. I read somewhere, I think I read on Kotaku, that that the Wii is outselling the PS3 in Japan by like 3-1.
That's not good. That's not good, Sony.
It's not good.
I think the Japanese market will come around once we get some, you know, some dungeon dice on the system.
Well, the thing is that the PS3 is such it's a much more long-term system than the 360 and the Wii are. I mean, it's one of those systems that's really gonna need to push and get some momentum going and get some games, and really it needs to grow into the huge amount of potential that is in there. But right now it's just a joke because there's really nothing. I mean, it's kind of like the DS when it came out. It's like people didn't know what to do with it. There's no games for it. You know, it's going to take a while for the price of the Blu-ray to come down too. And once that comes down to like a $400 system, and once it gets a library of games, it's going to be a much more competitive thing. And then plus it has the back library of PS2 games, which makes it a much more automatic buy than a 360 is.
That's true. Very true. And not only that, but like you have to get supposedly you have to buy an adapter to be able to use your old PlayStation 2 saves, you know?
I'm not sure. I mean the PS3 does have a memory card slot right in the front of it.
Dude, we don't know anything.
No,
what
son,
are you asking us
to play
for?
To pop the P. No, look here, son. To pop the PS2 or PS1 memory cards into the PlayStation 3, you got to buy an adapter, son. Right, Justin Fick?
I don't know. I mean, there is a slot for it on the front of it.
There is not a slot. Listeners, back me up.
Dude,
all right. This article. Sony rep says that a Wii is an impulse buy. SCA spokesman tells the New York Times that Nintendo's new console doesn't belong in the same category as the PlayStation 3. So this is our good buddy Dave Carricker, or Dave Cracker, as we called him on the last show. He's been fairly critical of his rivals, such as Microsoft. Remember a few months back, he said that the HD DVD add-on for the 360 was unfortunate, and that it was a disservice to their and the movie, the HD download system was a disservice to the core consumer base. So now, Carricker is quoted as saying in the New York Times, the Wii could be considered an impulse buy more than anything else. Ouch, Mr. Ooh. Carricker. So he's talking trash. Is that what this guy's job is? He's like, I work at Sony and I talk trash. Everybody listen to me.
Dude, I don't know what he's talking about. Like, impulse buy is me buying like a thing of Kleenex at the register. That's impulse buy. You know, like chocolate bar or whatever. Not $250 system at...
Impulse buy for Blake Buck is a whole box of Slim Jims.
Well, Blake Buck will impulse buy games and consoles. I've seen it happen.
You've never seen it. You're quiet, son.
But I mean, I do agree with him though that the Wii is in a different it doesn't belong in the same category as the PS3. The Wii is a game system. The PS3 is, I don't know what the hell a PS3 is.
It's a monster. Here's what gets me about that. I got a little piece to say about the Wii that occurred to me the other day. See, like, I'm excited about the Wii, but what really gets me about the Wii is that I'm nervous that, like, 6 months or a year down the road, we're just going to be seeing all the same games that are on the other system, except they look uglier on the Wii, and you just wiggle the game. It's got wiggle controls, like they're making Manhunt for, you know, the Wii, and it's going to be like the PlayStation 2 one, except you got wiggle controls, yeah!
Dude, you know what Manhunt on the Wii is going to be? It's going to be Wiimote and nunchuck as a choke wire, and you wire it around someone's neck and you pull, and that will be the best thing ever.
You're right. How could I doubt it?
And how much better would Manhunt be if you got to hit instead of just punch a button?
Yeah, you can like knock the guy over and just punch his face into the ground. Yeah, Leisure Suit Larry for the Wii is coming.
What worries me about the Wii is that, like, game developers are just like, what do we do with this controller, you know? And they're like, I guess we'll just, like, map buttons to, like, directions you wiggle the stick, you know?
Twilight Princess.
Yeah.
It's like games have to be totally designed for the Wii to be good. Like, I was thinking about this. You'll never play Street Fighter on the Wii, ever.
Yeah, and then, I mean, and Smash Brothers on the Wii is supposedly not going to use the remote.
See, that's the whole thing. It's like you can't have some kinds of game on the Wii. Like some kinds of games just don't work. Like how could you? You could never play Splinter Cell. Like think of Splinter Cell Chaos Theory, which has like 8 buttons. Like on every single button on the, it's like you hold like shift, and there's an extra set of buttons on every. There's no way that would work on the Wii controls.
Well, I think what we're gonna see is we're gonna see something very similar to what happened with the DS. Like in the beginning, like the DS had the cool first party titles. It had, you know, maybe like one or two original titles are made for the DS for the launch, and then you just see crap. For the next couple months, when people don't really know what to make, and so they're just porting their junk over, and you're gonna see maybe like some stupid Nickelodeon licensed games, but I mean after a while people are gonna start to get it and get how to develop for it and find out what's fun.
To pull this back around to the original article, I can see what they're saying and saying it's an impulse buy, as in like it's kind of a new thing and you're like, oh, I gotta have this now. I'm just hoping that Nintendo and developers can keep the Wii going, because if innovation doesn't start happening soon, I think the Wii's gonna run out of steam quick.
But I mean, if we are to learn from the DS, the Wii will become a very dominant system, just like the DS has. All right, so Microsoft is rewriting GamerScore rules. So the big publisher has given the okay to add 250 achievement points through downloadable content and 50 points to arcade titles downloadable content. So as we know, a lot of 360 gamers, myself included, like to go to extraordinary lengths to unlock these achievements. And now there are rumors... or following rumors that Microsoft will be awarding achievements with real-world prizes, the company's marketing team has confirmed new rules for achievement points on its GamerScore blog. So the maximum number of achievement points is now 1,250, up from 1,000 for full retail releases. But the extra 250 points can be included in downloadable content that you can get through the marketplace. Arcade titles have gone up to 250. From 200, same deal, downloadable content. And also, what we're going to start seeing is games can now ship with less than 1,000 points, but you must offer more through the free downloadable content to bring it to 1,000. Now, we're going to see this with Crackdown. Crackdown, if you checked out the achievement list, only awards 900 points altogether. But it's downloadable content that they'll be offering that will round that out to 1,000.
Well, I guess that's all right. And at least it's good that they're like, you know, addressing downloadable content rather than being like, oh, we don't know what's going on.
But they've also confirmed that even though some games in the past have not been 1,000 points, like for instance, Condemned Criminal Origins only gets up to 970. Battle for Middle Earth 2 was only like 700 something, if I recall. But it has said that all games going forward have to offer 1,000 points.
Yeah, apparently there was some game in Japan, like Aquafish 2000, where you had like some sort of like you had a virtual fish tank, and like it only offered 250 points in the game, and then to get the rest of them, you had to buy like 20 like downloadable contents, which that was a lot of extra money. And so I think that's one of the reasons they're rewriting the rules here.
But I gotta give hats off to Microsoft here, because they have rewritten the rules on how Justin Fick buys games. Now, normally for PS2, the Wii, the DS, Justin Fick goes in the game store and thinks, well, what game is really good? What have I heard is really good? What do I really really want to get? What is really really awesome? And I'll get it and I'll play it and I'll enjoy it. When I go to the Xbox 360 section, I think, what game is tolerable enough that I can suffer through to get 1,000 gamer score points? Like, it is that reason that I actually rented and sat through and played through King Kong and Cameo Elements of Power.
Dude, nobody likes that game. I don't understand.
I don't know. I mean, it was really hyped as like this awesome, you know, next-gen epic game, and you can tell that they really tried to make it that playing through it. And I don't know. It's just, it's retarded. I don't know what to tell you.
Justin Fick. You know, it's retarded. Expert game reviews here on Best Damn Podcast Ever. All right, so Castlevania has been collected on the PSP. Now, I'll have you guys know, I just stole this article to make William Miller do the difficult article at the end of the show. Advanced podcasting techniques. So, Dracula X Chronicles and Rondo of Blood will make an appearance with the PC Engine Original and Symphony of the Night later in the year. So, for handheld with latter day... What? Shut up. Dracula...
Look at you.
So, it looks like Dracula X is going to be getting a remake on the PSP. It came out originally in 2001 on the PlayStation... on the PlayStation Castlevania Chronicles, Dracula X Chronicles features an older installment in the Vampire Slaying series that has never been released outside of Japan. And the former games unlike Castlevania Chronicles, the main attraction of the Konami's new PSP game isn't importing the original version of the game, but in fact, players will have to unlock the original because it, I guess they've remade it in full 3D. Yeah, it features a full 3D remake of Rondo of Blood and retains the 2D gameplay. So this is our favorite 2.5D of, like, you know, Mega Man Maverick Hunters and all that jazz. So this sounds good, son. I'm ready for it. And apparently later in the year, they're also going to be releasing Symphony of the Night.
Oh, man.
So I'm ready for it, son.
Now, it says here that that Symphony of the Night is going to be an unlockable on this PSP game.
Wait, I thought that was just the soundtrack. That's the whole thing is unlockable?
It says, and if bloodthirsty players want a little more vampire hunting action, Konami's also including an unlockable version of Castlevania Symphony of the Night, a PlayStation hits title.
That's Wait, good. Is it like a remade one, or is it like It'll the be, original?
In the Dracula X thing they're remaking, there will be an original version of Symphony of the Night.
Dude, wouldn't you hate to be that guy that like had to port Symphony of the Night for an unlock in some other game? Like, no thank you.
If it was me, I would know that this port I'm doing is the reason they're buying this disc.
Right.
Well, like, and also, this isn't like the hell of like, they're remaking it on Xbox. It's supposed to be coming out this month, and it's going to have, like, you know, HD graphics and new soundtrack and all that jazz. But I think this is just going to be a straight-up original port. Mm-hmm. But still... Dracula X and Symphony of the Night on the PSP, I'm excited. Almost as excited as Jack Thompson facing the...
All right, just stop now.
You're supposed to say Florida Bar, damn it.
All right, so Jack Thompson is in trouble with the Florida Bar again. So here's what happened. The Florida Bar... See, Jack's got all these little feuds going on. He's got one with Howard Stern, of course, Rockstar, and Take-Two Interactive, and all these other people. So the Florida Bar decided just to make things easier. They'd roll all these complaints up into one big complaint and file it with the state Supreme Court. And so this news broke on GamePolitics.com earlier in the week. And so he consolidated all of his things into one. Now he's going to have to take care of it.
And now what I'm hearing is that if the court gets their way, I mean, because this is actually something that the courts are bringing against Thompson. If they get their way, he faces disbarment.
What will Jack Thompson do? He'll just be another whiny bitch on the internet without his license.
I'm telling you, like, I don't know when we said it. I think it was like episode 2 or 3 or very early on. I made the prediction Jack Thompson is gonna molest little boy, end up in a cop chase, ending in suicide with needles in his arm behind a Denny's.
So the 40-page complaint details the accusations against Thomas, which include a number of misdeeds, such as repeatedly disobeying judges' orders and violating Alabama's rules of professional conduct. Specifically, Thompson made out of court statements that could tamper with the court case. The complaint also alleges that Thompson directly violated a judge's order multiple times. So Fayette County Circuit Court Judge Moore, remember him from the video, revoked Thompson's license temporarily to practice law in Alabama for his behavior in a suit of a man convicted of killing two police officers and a dispatcher. He's also had problems like apparently he tried to solicit he tried to get somebody to hire him after he already had a lawyer or something. He denies that one. A couple other things. So he's going to have a lot to chew on from the Florida bar.
I love it. I love Jack Thompson. I hope he fights and wins. Can't stop the train, baby.
Well, I'm worried just because if Thompson gets disbarred and ends up in a suicide cop chase, who are we going to demonize? We're going to have no more bad guy.
It's going to be back to Cliffy B. All right. Well, now it's time for releases.
Okay, this week in the releases, Diddy Kong Racing DS, February 5th, Diddy Kong Racing comes to the DS with a new look and controls. Final Fantasy VI Advance for the Game Boy Advance. We all remember that classic, otherwise known as Final Fantasy III in the States. And Lunar Knights for the DS, released February 6th. Lunar Knights, you take control of two warriors on a quest to reclaim Dungeon Dice.
Also coming out, we have Winning 11 Pro Evolution Soccer 2007 for 360, PS2, PSP, and DS. Winning 11 Pro Evolution Soccer 2007 continues the franchise onto next-gen consoles. Good job. MVP 07 NCAA Baseball for PS2. It includes a new feature called Rock and Fire Pitching, offering more control of the pitches. What the hell is Rock and Fire Pitching? This sounds like a baseball game I might be into. We also have R. Tonalico, Melody of Alemia. Jeez. R. Tonalico by developer
Gust. Anemia. That was the joke. Yeah. Keep going.
R. Tonalico by developer Gust of Atelier fame features party-based battles, weapon customization, and a full 3D world map. Also, we have War Rock for PC. War Rock is a tactical shooter that takes place in a mercenary-ridden future after a global energy crisis.
All right. We've also got Worms eventually coming out on the Xbox 360. I told you guys it was going to come out last week. That was a lie. And I like lying to you. All right. That's my favorite thing to do to listeners because I don't like them. So Worms is coming out sometime this month for the Xbox 360. We've also got The Sims Life Stories. Ooh, boy. This laptop-friendly game is the first in The Sims Stories to feature an all-new directed story mode that lets you take Riley or Vince through a unique story of romance, conflict, and dramatic moments. Romance of the Kingdoms, of Three Kingdoms, wait, Romance of Three Kingdoms 11? Surely I haven't missed out on the first 10 installments of Romance of the Three Kingdoms. It says it returns for the 11th iteration in the series. So I know you guys, you Romance of Three Kingdoms fans, are breathing a sigh of relief.
See, that's the game that's in Blockbuster that has the samurai all over it that you think about renting, then you look at the back of the box and you decide not to.
Well, this is one of those games for me that I remember hearing about it when the first one came out for NES, and then just heard about every one of them since then and just never gave a about any one of them.
All right, so we got Alien Shooter Vengeance for PC, February 5th, 2007. Vengeance drops players into an expansive sci-fi world, classic hack-and-slash gameplay, and features dozens of weapons and 50 alien species. Got UFO Afterlight for PC, February 9th. UFO Afterlight is a strategy game which take control of ground troops and manage resources in an effort to defend your Mars from enemy robots. We've got City Life World Edition for PC, February 9th. City Life World Edition is an updated version of City Life featuring new maps and over 100 new buildings, famous landmarks from across the globe, and a built-in content editor. And then we got Blitzkrieg Fall of the Reich for PC, dated February 9th. This game covers three major offenses in the final days of fighting on the Eastern Front.
Oh my god, it's time for judgment!
All right, Justin Fig, you've got some partner net heat for us this week, don't you?
All right, I do have partner net heat for us this week. Now, I'm gonna preamble this by saying that nothing on PartnerNet is final, but I did see on PartnerNet it is available for download a version of Alien Hominid HD.
So wait, before you get into this, explain to our listeners what PartnerNet is.
PartnerNet is basically Xbox Live for developers.
So developers can go and put their unfinished games on there for other developers to play. That's PartnerNet.
Well, not so much for them to play, but more like for testing live, for testing downloads, for testing content packs, that kind of thing.
Got it.
But it means that everyone goes and plays
right.
it. So basically, if you put your heat up on PartnerNet, it's out.
Got it.
So Alien Hominid is out on PartnerNet. And I got to tell you that this game is going to kick untold amounts of ass, and it's going to be the must-have game on Xbox Live Arcade when it hits. Now, for those that don't know, Alien Hominid was a PS2 and GameCube game maybe about a year ago, give or take. And it was based off of a Flash game on Newgrounds.com made by Tom Fulp and Dan Paladin. Tom Fulp is the Newgrounds guy, and Dan Paladin is his artist. And they put this together, got a deal to make a PS2 game. And it came out, and it kicked ass, but I don't know if it sold all that well. Like, it was very under the radar, but it was a beautiful, like, run-and-gun, Contra-style, old-school shooter. And one of Justin Fick's favorite games. And now it's going to come out in Xbox Live Arcade, and They've kept the same cool animation and art. It pretty much plays exactly like the PS2 version. It's much smoother animation. It does have same system co-op. I don't think it has Xbox Live co-op, but it's one of those games where if you were playing on live, it would be impossible to play with any amount of lag anyway. So don't even shed a tear. For Xbox Live co-op, if that's the case.
So is this a port of the PS2 version, or is this a new game?
Yes, this is a port of the version that you saw on PS2 and GameCube. Mm-hmm. But however, it's much improved animation-wise. It's much smoother. It plays like gold. And quick overview for those that have never heard of it. You play an alien that crash lands on Earth, and basically your job is just to eat people. So the FBI comes after you. You can shoot them. You can jump on their backs, eat their heads. You can play with a buddy and jump off his shoulders, jump on someone's back, eat their heads. It's very cool, very bloody, very stylish, 2D, 2D elements. No 2D Satan elements.
No.
2D alien elements. But
those are my favorite elements.
But I do not know what the price is going to be yet. I don't know if that's been announced. But it's definitely going to be, regardless of the price, a must-have come release date. So, Behemoth, hats off.
Well, all right.
Judgment, thumbs up.
Good. I want it. I'm going to be waiting for it, Justin. It better be coming up soon.
I'm buying that the day it comes out.
All right, now it's time for the jank. All right, so Justin Fick, do you want to do your jank first, or do we want to do my jank first?
Do your jank first, because my jank beats your jank.
Well, I have a good... Look, now Blake Buck has a rather unusual jank this week, because it's not going to be popular with not only the hosts of the shows, but some of our listeners. But guess what? I'm doing it anyway, because I got to serve the fans, guys. All right? I've got to serve the fans, not the little bitches on the internet who are going to complain. The fans. So, my jank for this week is Luminace Live on the Xbox 360, downloadable off the Xbox Live Arcade for $25. That's right. What? $25 for an Xbox Live Arcade game? That's insane, right? Well, for the month of February, I think until like February 21st, maybe like the 29th, I don't know, somewhere in there, you can download the entire Luminace Live with all the, downloadable content, expansions, a whole bunch of new levels, all that jazz, $25.
Now, if you'll remember, the original Lumens Live was released with minimal content. You had to download a whole bunch of it off of XBLA to get the whole game. So this is the complete game for just $25.
Well, it's not the complete game, but it's everything that's been released so far. I mean, I'm sure they could release more, but it's complete in terms of it's everything that's been released. So you get a very full-featured Luminace puzzle game. For $25, I mean, like, the PSP version of Luminace is, like, $30 or $40. So, I mean, paying $25 for a quality Luminace puzzle game with online co-op, HD graphics, all that, it's a savings, baby! It's a savings! Luminace Live! My screen name is Blake Buck, all caps, no space, and I want to see one of you playing me on Xbox, because you bought it, because it's awesome.
Now we have double jank this week, and I leave it up to the listeners to judge whose jank is jankier. But my jank this week is Sneak King, 99 cents, blam.
Oh, son!
Burger King has dropped the price on their Xbox games to 99 cents a pop. So for $3, you can get all three games. You can get Sneak King, Big Bumpin', and Pocket Bike Racers, and the gamer score points therein.
So wait a minute. Sneak King now costs the same as one Wendy's JBCB? Is that what you're telling me?
That's what I'm trying to tell you.
Wow.
Dude, you could get 25 Burger King games for the price of Luminace Live.
This does bring tidings, though, to our pricing system, our economy. As you know, all prices are in Sneak Kings. By the way, you failed on that, Mr. Buck. But our conversion rate of dollars to Sneak Kings is now 1-to-1.
Now is the 99-cent deal at all Burger Kings or just like a special site or what?
Now I have been unable to find a Burger King to confirm or deny, but there is photographic evidence on the internet. Of Burger King's with 99 cents, so I do not know the full jankiness of it yet, but I would imagine if some have 99 cents, all will be 99 cents.
Well, all right, the perfect time to pick up the perfect trilogy. All right, are we doing a discussion this week, guys?
Yeah, I put this in here, the discussion on multiplayer games, because Danny Button Barry is being admitted into the Hall of Fame, like I forget which Hall of Fame she's being admitted into, but...
This is the AIAS, the one that Capcom does not like.
Yeah, exactly. So she's being admitted into the Hall of Fame, and also saw a really neat Gamasutra article on the best multiplayer games, or the most influential multiplayer games of all time. So I thought maybe we would discuss this in discussion. We didn't have a discussion last show, did we, Blake Buck?
We haven't had a discussion for the past couple of shows.
Yeah, so I think we're long overdue for a good one. So I'll kick this off here. First of all, it's important to know, like, Where the multiplayer game comes from, and that's certainly from Danny Buttonberry, or Dan, as he was known back in the day. So like strangely enough, like many game designers, she had a sex change in November 1992. But
the great exodus,
like many game designers.
Yeah, it's weird. So
it's rampant.
It was an exodus, I'm telling you.
Right. So the first thing she's really known for, or I guess not at the time but now, is a game that she made for the Apple II, I guess, called Wheeler Dealers. And this game had a custom controller and was one of the early multiplayer games out there. And it retailed for, I think, $35 and was sold in like a plastic bag. And this game only sold about 50 copies total. But the one that really put her on the map was a game called Mule, which was her first game for EA and was made for the Atari. And I think the 68K or X68K PC, but I don't remember. Maybe the Commodore too. But this was a game that supported four players. It was like an economic simulator or something. And space, you know, aliens. I don't remember. I only played it a couple times. But it did have multiplayer. So it was one of the really, really early multiplayer games. Seminal, if cool. You will.
All right, so guys, I have read this Gamasutra article, and I pretty much don't agree with any of the games they have on here. I think we should have our top three best multiplayer games ever, each.
Oh, I'm ready for it. Let's hear it. Justin Vick, go.
All right, me go first? All right, well, I have to say, in no particular order, I would have to say Contra gets a spot, because I remember Contra being the first game that we played that had simultaneous multiplayer.
That was a key factor back in like 92. Because every game back in that day had two player, but it was always like, you know, taking turns two player. What was that?
Hot seat.
But Contra has endured the test of time. and it is still a test of manliness on how you do in co-op Contra. Like, if you play Contra and you can't keep up with the other guy and you keep dying, you are not a man.
That's it. When we get together next time.
Now, and also, Contra has evolved in the Justin Fix circles into drunken Contra. Now, I know I must have brought this up in the podcast before, because it's such a staple of Justin Fix get-togethers. Drunken Contra is a drinking game, which you play. You have to play co-op. So you're playing with a buddy. Any Contra will do, but typically Contra, the original Contra or Contra 3, are the way to go. And basically, you can play it. You can play it normally, but you do put in the 30 life code, first of all. But
all right.
When you die, you take a shot. Now, naturally, gameplay completely degrades by the second or third level. And people start fainting around level 4. Now you can also play it hardcore. Hardcore drinking Contra is when either of you dies, both of you take a shot.
Ooh. So you die as a team. I like that.
Yes. Because we noticed that what happened was when first time we tried playing drunken Contra, Justin Fick was doing so good and playing so flawlessly that he was sober for most of the game. And inevitably, the lesser men that could not keep up would get drink, and Justin Fick would be like, you know what? I want to start taking shots.
You voluntarily take shots.
Now, see, this game would never work for Blake Buck. Because, see, Blake Buck sucks real bad at Contra. So we'd be, like, halfway through level 1, and I would be on the floor, passed out, vomiting.
Well, just so you know, Justin Fick plays all drinking games to lose.
Because you're an alcoholic. All right. What's your next one?
My next one, I'd have to say, I'm going to go out on a limb here for my next one and say Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, the arcade game.
Ooh, that was a good one.
Because I noticed on Gamma Sutra they mentioned Double Dragon, and I was like, dude, Double Dragon was lame. Four-player Teenage Mutant Ninja...
Heroes in a Half Shell, baby! Yeah.
Four-player simultaneous Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtle kicking was the orgasm of gameplay back in the early 90s.
I remember whenever you picked up the health thing, it was like boxes of Pizza Hut pizza. They go, pizza time!
That's what I say when I pick up boxes of pizza off the floor.
Whenever Blake Buck eats pizza now, he has to look down at it before he delves in and say, pizza time!
So yeah, number 2, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles arcade game. And now, my number 3, I am going to go ahead and mention one of the Gamma Sutra games is Quake, the original Quake 1. Because that to me was the first person shooter that was truly broke out into deathmatch. I mean, we had Doom, and that had deathmatch, and you know it was cool. But I mean, for you know, like just connecting to people was such a pain in the ass. And Quake was the first game that really made it huge.
Yeah, I remember playing on Heat.net. Justin Fick, you ever play on Heat.net?
Heat.net, negative. I never played on Heat.net.
Oh, man, that was like the online... That was like GameSpy before there was GameSpy. It was Heat.net. It was all like web client-based, so it was really crappy and didn't work very well. But like, you would connect just enough to like warrant you continuing to use Heat.net. Like, every one out of maybe 10 attempts would work. And you're like, oh, it works now. I'm having so much fun.
Now, whatever became of Heat.net, how much would it cost us to buy Heat.net, the domain name?
Dude, I don't know.
Dude, Heat.net's probably owned by, like, GameSpy now. They own everything. I remember their logo was like, it was like a peace symbol, but they were like, it was like red flame shooting out of the peace logo. And it was like a crosshair. Had all three elements working for it.
So yeah, Quake to me was the first person shooter that really did it right. I mean, Wolfenstein didn't have any. Doom sucked. Marathon, forget it. So Quake 1.
Quake?
Quick, quick.
All right, is that it?
That's my three.
All right, you ready for my three? All right, so here are mine. The first one on my list is Serious Sam. Serious Sam had some of the coolest multiplayer, because like you could play two-player on the same computer if you have dual monitors, if you'll remember. Blake Buck and I could never get it to work right in the dorm, but it is possible.
Dude, that was awesome.
Yeah.
You know, I think we got it to work one time.
I think we might have gotten it to work, yeah. But that had awesome multiplayer, because there's nothing better than like sitting next to Blake Buck playing Serious Sam and hitting him in the face when he screws up.
Multiplayer Serious Sam, we talking a co-op then, or we calling or talking deathmatch?
I think it was co-op, wasn't it, Blake Buck?
Yeah, it was co-op.
Yeah, it was co-op. We played through the game co-op, so that was fun.
That game is impossible to beat. Like man on planet Earth has ever legitimately beaten. I've beaten Serious Sam 1. Serious Sam's 1's not that bad. Serious Sam 2, like the last little, it's a joke. No mortal can beat that game.
Is that a challenge, Blake Buck?
Uh-oh.
Oh, no, son, let me tell you something. You're about to say something stupid that you're going to regret. Because it's like, get this. So, okay, this is a side story, but it's the same kind of thing. Ninja Gaiden on the original NES, nobody has ever beat that goddamn game. And anybody who says they had is a f***ing liar. I played that on an emulator last week. Save state every 10 goddamn seconds. No f***ing human being on Earth has ever beaten Ninja Gaiden 1. Now, you might have beaten Ninja Gaiden 2. That was for all right? Ninja Gaiden 1, you jump in the air and there are like six f***ing birds in your face. There's cheetahs running up behind you. Man with the ninja stars throwing at you. It's bull motherf***er. You, Team Ninja.
Air Siren, where are you?
So back to what we were saying, Serious Sam 2 on that same level. Total nobody can beat that game.
All right, Justin Fick, the call has gone out. Do you officially accept challenge to beat Serious Sam 2?
Or Ninja Gaiden 1, either one.
I said Serious Sam 2, Ninja Gaiden 1.
I'm telling you, like, it doesn't matter how hardcore you are. No f***ing human being has ever beaten that game without like Hack Cheats 2000. No man can beat that game, ever.
Oh, my God. All right.
Like, I'm serious. There's this one part where you have to jump between a ledge, right? And there are no enemies on screen. And you jump, and like 15 enemies just home in on you like heat-seeking missiles. It's stupid. You're like, and you play it 100 times, and you're like, this is ridiculous. You got to cut like 3 dudes before you hit the ground in order to make it past that part.
Okay, so my number two, and this is, I borrowed a page from this Gama Sutra article for this one, because when I played it, I loved it. That has to be the original Pokemon for Game Boy. Now, more than any other game, like the trading and the fighting that you did in real life with your friends was exactly like what you played in the game, almost. That had awesome multiplayer. I remember going into middle school and being like, dude, I challenge you because you have red and I have blue.
Dragon blue, let's go.
Seriously, man. Awesome. Awesome multiplayer.
Dude, Blake Buck, I remember when Pokemon came out. And I remember I bought that game the day it came out. And I thought to myself.
Me too.
I've got something. Because I got, like, I was on the Nintendo Power Super Bonus Buddy Club or whatever. And, like, Nintendo had, like, sent me a bunch of promotional materials talking about Pokemon before it came out. They sent me a tape. And I'm actually talking about an actual VHS tape this time. And it had, like, Pokemon. And they're like, oh, get ready for Pokemon. And I was thinking to myself, this game will never pick up in the U.S. This game is too Japanese. American gamers won't like Pokemans. And then one year later, I'm battling for my life with my Squirtle on the playground.
Now, this is one series of games that I never quite got into.
See, I think, Justin Vick, you're probably too old.
You're too old. Yeah, you missed. You were probably in high school when we were playing this game in middle school. We were prime target for this game.
I dodged the Pokemon bullet.
Dude, I remember I had my little click, my little blue click, and we'd fight the red click. That's how it went down.
I remember everybody said they had Mew, remember? Mew was like the ultimate unlock, right? Remember, like, man, I got that Pokemon, let me see. Oh, you can't see a secret.
All right. So my number three, or this is number one. I've been going in reverse order from worst to best. So the multiplayer game that I had the most fun with was Secret of Mana. Because Secret of Mana was like Zelda with three dudes, and it was made by Squaresoft.
It wasn't quite like Zelda.
Well, it wasn't quite like... I mean, it was a lot different from Zelda, but like it had that same action-adventure feel.
I can see what you're saying, but I definitely wouldn't say... I don't think I would quite say it was like Zelda. It had some Zelda-esque elements.
Okay, but anyway, it was really fun. And Simon, my roommate, found the ROM hack to make Sekai Densetsu 3 work with 3-player. Oh, my God. Oh, my God. It's amazing. Anyway, those are my three. Blake Buck, go.
All right, my three are in no particular order, but all equal in importance. Number one, X-Men on the arcade. You guys remember X-Men?
Ah, yes.
William Miller didn't remember X-Men. William Miller didn't even play arcade. X-Men, we're dead.
We're dead. where's my Pokemons?
X-Men was like a six-player side-scrolling beat-em-up, and you could pick any, like, depending on which sticks you used, it was your different player. So if you used the sticks on the left, you got stuck with, like, you know, somebody lame like Nightcrawler. And you beat up those purple things. You remember the animated series and purple dudes who were bad? Yeah, you beat those up, and that was a whole game, and it was awesome. And, it was like my first, like, six-player video game experience. And it was right in the mid-90s, so I was doing a lot of and it was wild. Oh, damn it, we're supposed to be cutting down on drug references. Damn it.
Now, what is it, though, with purple dudes and being evil? Because if you guys recall, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles had the Foot Clan.
Yeah, that's right. I don't know.
Like, was there some purple backlash that I missed in the early 90s, or? Yeah, I don't know. Tinky Winky, Teletubby, purple.
So also, yep. My next game, though in no particular order, is Battlefield 1942. Now, Blake Buck...
That was on the article, too, Blake Buck.
Blake Buck loved Battlefield 1942. Sorry, that's my porn name. Blake Buck loved Battlefield 1942 because it was 1 to 64 players, baby. 64 players. That means 64 noobs to pwn per server. And you got to fly a plane, and I got to drop bombs. My favorite was when you just got in the Jeep and just run over some dude. But then you'd find somebody who was doing the same thing as you, and the two of you would just run into each other and both explode. So, yeah, that was like my first, like... Even today, I don't think there's any game that's eclipsed that in terms of, like, number of players, like, per... I mean, I know, like, MMOs, but, like, in a very... You know what I'm saying. In, like, a strict first-person shooter sense, I don't think a game has come close in terms of, like, scope.
All right, what's your next one?
All right, next up, my final game, and you guys, you're going to make noises at me, but I don't care. EverQuest for the PC.
Explain yourself. Explain yourself.
Blake Buck, see, first of all, the concept of an MMO is cool. And so when, like, back in, like, 1999, when I heard of EverQuest, and it was like an online world where you play with your friends, I was so entranced. You know, there was no World of Warcraft alternative.
But see, Blake Buck doesn't have friends in real life, so he thought he'd go on this virtual world and get some.
Oh, they're gonna love me there. I'm gonna have Intimidate and Shout to be my friend.
But, it was like the first real... I mean, I know there was, like, Ultima and stuff, but it was really the first real big MMO, you know, that really hit pay dirt. There were a lot of people who played, and it was a cool concept at the time to be playing with thousands of other people, you know, simultaneously going through zones questing together. So, yeah. And another thing I like about EverQuest, this is just kind of a side note. EverQuest, when I originally played it, was so much harder. So much harder. Like... They made it a lot easier now to compete, like, with World of Warcraft. But, like, if you died in, like, EverQuest, you lost, like half a level. It was ridiculous. So, like the world was scarier in EverQuest. You had to band together. There was more of a sense of, like, I'm about to die at all times, and that is very bad.
That's still nothing, though, compared to old MUDs, which are text-based MMOs, which a lot of them had permadeath.
That's true. And Diablo had hardcore mode, too.
That it did, but you had to specifically choose hardcore mode. And some of these MUDs, you were hardcore mode. You had no choice in the matter whatsoever.
Yeah, Diablo was another really good one. It's another really good multiplayer. And that's the first game I really, like, had LAN party with like, I don't know, I didn't do the LAN party thing. I still don't, but I would get some friends over and we'd hook up the Macs over Apple Talk and play Diablo 2. It's pretty hot.
Well, all right. So if any of you guys have any, would like to send us any of your favorite multiplayer gaming memories, just send us an email at feedback@bestdamnpodcastever or call our listener 9 at 845-BATTLE-9. I can say that with my eyes closed. And now it's time for feedback. All right, first, guys, we got no voicemails this week. What's going on, guys? Where's the voicemails? I don't. You know Blake Buck can't read. So if you could just call in at 845-BATTLE-9 and leave us your voicemails, this would go so much smoother.
Indeed.
So who's this first email from, Wee Miller?
All right, this is from Dylan F. It says, well, I just wanted to say this show is great and funny, and it seems like you've been sort of slow putting them out lately. I don't know what it's like to edit and stuff.
Me neither.
Let's put the show out, and it's probably a lot harder than I think. I don't really know what it's like either. It's just magic. That's how it happens. Magic that takes a long time. So says not no more now. It's like a once a month thing. Thanks for the show. Been listening since IMG episode 7. In response, we've got a new editor now, as we all know, Tom Barbalay, and he's doing a really good job for us. So
Blake Buck takes a notoriously long amount of time to edit shows, and that's why we've got Mr. Barbalay, who's just so good. And like, I don't, it's like that was my least favorite part of the podcast is doing the editing, because it always takes me so long to edit these shows. Like, I'm sure it takes Mr. Barbalay like a third of the time it takes me to edit these shows.
I don't really know why we've been down to like one show a month or something, but all of us have been real busy. I mean, you know, I'm back in school writing code all day, and Justin Fick's writing code all day, and Blake Bug's all day. So, I mean, you know, we got a lot to do, but we're going to try to get back to our once a week schedule.
All right, so our next email comes from Bruce Morrison, or Bruce M, as it says here. He says, Blake Buck, I take you into my home, I feed you chili, you play my game, sleep on my futon, and yet nothing in episode 11 or 12. I'm out for blood. So I guess he's referring to, I guess I haven't thanked him for his hospitality at the IGDA party in December. So if I haven't officially thanked you on the air, Mr. Morrison, thank you, sir.
Also, thank you for doing our news on the website. That's...
Oh, that as well. And eventually I'm going to be getting the video footage from said outing as soon as Blake Buck gets some time. Imagine if I were editing the show. I could just throw that video footage in the garbage. That would never come out.
All right. Evan F. writes, hey, guys, what's going on? I'd like to say a few things here. Thanks for making a real podcast. None of that super scripted American chopper style bullshit. Nothing like listening to a bunch of sarcastic comments when I'm doing some studying. Also, when can we expect some video comic relief? Just as good as your audio podcast. Thanks for kicking guys. I look forward to your next entry.
As for video comic relief, you should send emails to miller@bestdamnpodcastever.com.
No, don't do that.
That's all William can say. Oh, don't do that.
Look, Blake Buck has got this backlog of tapes.
I know, look.
And we took a lot of tapes at the IGDA thing. We took a lot of tapes when I was in Oxford. Blake Buck was in Oxford. He hadn't edited any of it together to give it to you, the listeners. He's just been...
Look, I've been showing you my opponents, okay? that's my video power this week.
Dude.
In case, for those of you who missed it, I saw a local ad on TV this past week for something called Mo Money Taxes, and it was the most ridiculous ad I'd ever seen. So I found a YouTube video of it and put it on the site. So for those of you who haven't seen the Mo Money Taxes ad, you should check it out on the site. Just click on Heat on the side, and it'll be probably one of the first couple entries.
So Blake Buck calls me during class, right? I'm in modeling class or interactive design class, some stupid class. And he calls me up, so I leave and take the call. And he says, William Miller, I have the funniest thing on the website. You got to see it. And I said, well, Blake Buck, I'm in class. He says, okay, good. Don't look at it in class. I thought, oh, my God, this must be really funny. So William Miller opens the browser up and looks at it in class. And sure enough, I was on the floor laughing in the middle of class. I couldn't help it. It was just too good. It was too good.
Now see, I was at free verse when that hit. I was a free verse when Blake Buck said this to me. He's like, check out the site now, all caps. And I did so. And that was the end of me and Bruce Morrison that day.
So if you hadn't seen the Mo Money Boys, go look at it on our site.
It's hilarious.
It's pretty good.
Does he say, show me my opponents? That's what we've kind of adopted.
I think that's what he says, yeah. Show me my opponents. Why is he eating chips? Nobody knows.
Why is he eating the chips? Did you see the guy in the back seat of the cop car and he's just jiggling around? Oh, I'm telling you, the more you watch this video, the funnier it gets. You may not even laugh the first time. Just watch it a second time, and it'll all become clear. Oh, all right, what else we got?
All right, well, this is going to be an all one breath because there's no punctuation in this email. All right, ready? Brandon P. Hey, Blake Buck, I got some stump power for you guys, and my stump for you is Star Ocean until the end of time, and this game is for the PS2. Kicks ass. Keep up the good work. Bye.
We played this game. We played it.
Son, Blake Buck not only owns, but Blake Buck and William Miller have played this game together. And let me tell you, it's all right. I would say kicks. I mean, Star Ocean 1 was better. I mean, it didn't have the heavy-handed dialogue or cutscenes like this game does.
But yeah, we played this game when we were living together in Jackson. And I've actually played the original Star Ocean for Nintendo, which was never released in the States, but was one of those, like, one of them 32-bit tapes that were real hot. And it had, like, voice in the beginning of it, like Super Metroid did. Oh, yeah. It was good.
The last Metroid was in captivity. The galaxy is at peace.
Thanks for that, guys.
Wise from your grave. No. Do a barrel roll. Oh, I'm just going to keep doing this for an hour. Use the boost. You're very lucky. I didn't expect to have to use this.
Oh, God. Okay, this one is from Listener Listening.
No. This is what I was going to ask. This is not Listener Listening. I was just thinking, you know, it's a lot. Like, adding, there are two things that add a lot of time to when these shows come out. In addition to, now that the editing's cleared up, I swear, I'm such a I'm like, now I don't edit. Now I don't even want to do the rest of the show. But I want to just poll the audience and see. The two things that add the most time is the little description. If you notice, last week's description was just witty description because I wasn't feeling too creative that day. Is writing the little description that goes for the show and add them the album art and links. So, I don't know. Do you guys mind so much if we didn't have album art and links and show description? Or, I mean, would you guys be opposed to us just having like an MP3 version of the show and sticking it up there?
Well, I like being able to jump from chapter to chapter. That should stay.
Yeah, absolutely. I think, well, the biggest part of the turnaround for that is like William Miller doing the art. So I think what I'm going to do is make like generic art for banners and the album art thing. And also the Wiki Fairy is staunchly opposed to this. Wiki Fairy notes that, no, I love the album art and chapters in the podcast. How else can I jump to my favorite parts when listening to BDPE for the 23rd time? Now, the Wiki Fairy's identity is somewhat of a mystery to us, but here's a clue. He spells favorite with a U.
Uh-oh.
Ooh.
That's right.
That means he's from across the pond. We're on to you, Wiki Fairy.
Or perhaps he's an American wanting us to think he's across the pond.
Oh! We're going to have to get CSI on this. All right, now it's time for the stump.
All right, Blake Buck. I've been saving this stump for you guys since we tried to do this podcast 3 weeks ago. Are y'all ready?
Yeah, I'm ready.
All right. My stump this week is Time Killers.
Son. Now, hang on. This game sounds real familiar. Time Killers. Now, this wasn't Thrill Kill. I'm getting it confused with Thrill Kill, that game that never came out.
No. Time Killers.
Now, I know I've read about this game.
Justin Fick, I would assume that you've played this game.
Yes. As a matter of fact, I have. It's a...
Oh, wait. Oh, snap. Wait a minute. This this is an arcade game. This is the arcade game where you can cut off the other dude's head, right?
Yes, that's...
Son of no everything, son, suck my motherfucker.
Oh, God, I thought I had you for sure.
Oh, son, you got owned.
That's right.
Oh.
It came out in 1992, developed by Incredible Technologies, and was probably an attempt to like knock off of Mortal Kombat. But it's sort of like it's all hand drawn sprites or whatever. It's sort of a knockoff or a combination of Street Fighter and Mortal Kombat. But you could indeed cut off people's limbs and stuff.
And you could beat each other with the limbs, I think.
You could pick them up and beat each other with them. It was very violent. Justin Fick, I thought you were born with this game in your hand. I mean,
dude, baby, Black Buck plays all video games. You can't stop, Blake. You can't do it, son. Look, Blake Buck's got a new rule for his stump. Because Blake Buck is so good, son, at Stump Buck, I've decided that any game I pick has to be within the past 3 years. I can stump you guys every week with a game that's come out within the past 3 years.
Wait, before you start, Blake Buck, did you hear the article that, or did you hear the news that Nokia is going to be at GDC this year with a new N-Gage?
Dude, I heard that, Power, and I'm excited. Dude, don't be giggling at the Nokia, at the N-Gage now. I hear they got Dietrich on it. So back to topic. Blake Buck's game that's been released within 3 years for you guys this week. In fact, this one's only been out about 2 years. It's called Exit.
Dude, I know Exit. Exit is a
No, you don't.
Dude, I know Exit. Exit is a PSP game.
Or does Miller know it? Let's see. Wait. Does Miller know it?
Do you even have to ask?
Well, at least I got one.
Dude, of course I know that game.
Why don't you describe it for us then, son?
Let's hear it.
What was it called again? Exit. Well, obviously you're leaving.
Exit.
But you can't find the exit. You know. I don't know. Go, Justin Fick.
All right. Exit is a PSP game where you play a silhouette dude and in the middle of disasters, and you have to help people get out. And it's kind of like a puzzle action kind of deal.
This is true. All that is true. For some reason, it reminds me of Lemmings. I don't really know why, but you kind of go through levels. You have to solve puzzles and help people escape, like, burning buildings and stuff. The little guy is kind of like he's inspired, I guess, from the European exit. You ever see, like, have you guys ever been over to Europe? And over there, they have, like, a little man. Instead of the word exit, they have, like, a little man running out a door. You guys ever seen that? Well, our UK listeners will know what we're talking about. Anyway, it's sort of inspired from that. And it's a pretty cool game, and it's, like, $20 on the PSP. So, recommend to pick up if you don't have it already. Well, that does it for this week in the best damn podcast ever. What do you guys think about that, son?
That's a pretty good show. I'm glad we're back at it here.
Pretty good heat output.
Yeah. Sure, I was kind of sleepy at the beginning of this show, I'll be honest, but now I'm wide awake. I wish we could go back and redo the beginning. Tom Barbalay, if you want to cut down the beginning of the show, no problem here. So, if you'd like to send us any emails, it's feedback@bestdamnpodcastever.com, or you can call our listener line at 845-BATTLE-9. Also, guys, keep those donations coming. We've got none since our last one, but if you'd like to donate to us, it's donate@bestdamnpodcastever.com. Also, just a side note here, guys, if you're looking for some way to promote BDPE and you got some time on your hands, you could go vote for us over at Podcast Alley. Just go to podcastalley.com, search Best Damn Podcast Ever. You should see our entry there and click vote. And, vote for us this month. What's this month? February. February, it's going to be our month this month, guys. So
yeah, we're going
to
take it.
I remember back in the IMG days, we got to, like, number 77, which was, like, two slots higher than the podcast. So we got to beat them again, guys.
And Telemundo. Dude, Telemundo's giving us a run for our money on iTunes.
So, let's see. Anything else, guys? Is that it?
I think that's it.
All right. Well, from all of us here at the Best Damn Podcast Ever, I'm Blake Buck.
I'm William Miller.
I'm Justin Fick.
And we will see you next time.
Favorite. Mr. Barbalay is our favorite. love laser beams.